Join us for The Bicast, a podcast by and for the bisexual community.
We discuss and give voice to all of us under the big umbrella, bringing you information, news, entertainment, and support for all.
You can find us at thebicast.org, at The Bicast on Twitter, The Bicast on Tumblr, and Bicast in iTunes. Visit the Bicast page on Facebook and see how you can join the Facebook group.
And remember, you're not wrong, and you are not broken, and you are not alone.
So pull up your favorite comfy chair and relax.
And remember, everybody gets a cookie. At the Bicast, we strive to be about and for the bisexual community. Today, we have a very special little episode for our episode 3. We are going to be discussing that hefty little demon, labels. With us to do that today, we have two very special guests, Cameron Koo from my local bi group and Sherry Eisner. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having us, Lynette.
Oh, you're so welcome. So before we get started on this little task, we'll go with introductions.
I'm Will.
My name is Cameron.
I'm Lynette.
I'm Siri.
Welcome to everybody. So, labels. Interesting little subject. Kind of a love-hate relationship us bisexuals have with that. I myself carry a great many labels around with me, as everyone does. Kind of feel like Marley's ghost sometimes. Labels I carry around with me, I'm poor, white, female, cisgendered, bisexual, privileged, not privileged. Many things to carry around. Let's get into discussing labels and to talk about Sherry a little bit. Let's welcome Sherry. Hi, Sherry. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
I am wonderful. For those of you who may not know, Sherry is the author of Bi Notes for a Bisexual Revolution. She also has a Tumblr blog, that is Bi Dyke, and she's on WordPress with Bi Radical. Sherry, so you are calling us today from Tel Aviv.
I've never actually lived anywhere other than here.
Oh, wow. Have you ever been to the States before?
No, never. So I am trying to. So for anyone who hasn't heard yet, my book has been nominated for a Lambda Award and for a Bisexual Book Award fundraising now in order to try and get to New York to attend the ceremony. So if anyone is interested in donating or in passing the word on, they are very much invited to search me on Facebook or from my book page, Bi Notes for a Bisexual Revolution, and get all the details.
For those of you who couldn't hear what Sherry was saying, I apologize. I have discovered recording a Skype call from Tel Aviv is problematic. She is talking about her upcoming nominations for Lambda Literary Awards that will be happening in June, and there's been a GoFundMe crowdfunding started, and you can find that on her Facebook page, Bi Notes for a Bisexual Revolution. There'll be a link there. There's also a link on our pages, the Bicast page and the Bicast group. There will be links all over the place. Everyone is sharing it, so please share that link everywhere on Facebook, on Tumblr, and on Twitter. And if you possibly can, please donate. We will be providing all those links for her GoFundMe project and to all her sites and work in our episode 3 links that will be available on the website, in the Bicast group, and also on the Bicast page. So, Sherry, could you just tell me what inspired you to write the book?
A few years ago, I knew that I was going to write a book about bisexuality someday. And I didn't know what that book was going to be about. I thought it was going to be like a history of the bisexual movement in the U.S. or something similar. And then over time, I began gathering a lot more knowledge about bisexuality. I began reading a lot about it. That started from, I think, my second year at the university, my BA. Started reading a lot of material about bisexuality, academic, political, anything I could get my hands on. And I started having a very unique understanding of bisexuality and of bisexual thoughts when my activism became more known, and when I became more known as a blogger, I started realizing that no matter how much I wrote about it and how many activities I was organizing, people weren't fully understanding why I was doing things and how I understood it. And every time I talked about it, people were also very impressed with what I knew and the way I thought about it. So then there was a period of a few months where I just knew I had a bisexual book in my head. I actually had an outline and everything that I wanted to say, and I kept talking about it. And there came one weekend where three people in my life have told me that I should really start writing it, and so I did. And it took me a year to write, and then I think another year to publish. I'm really proud of it, and it's kind of surreal. I'm looking at it right now. It's sitting on the shelf.
Well, we are all very, very happy you did. It's very enlightening. It's helped me with a lot of my old views. It's helped me a lot, because up until a year ago, I identified as heterosexual. I fought very hard to identify as heterosexual because my conception of what bisexuality was, of course, the erroneous one that everyone else has. And I knew that I wasn't morally bankrupt, and I did not want to be perceived as wishy-washy, flighty, any of those wonderful little phobic things that there are. It took a lot of soul searching to get to where I embraced what I was and who I was. And then to read your book and get your views and why I was in that position was wonderful. I love the book. It's great. I haven't finished it. I've skimmed through it. I have gone through the first two chapters pretty extensively. But yes, that's why I'm so happy to have you on today. You're a big help to a lot of people.
That's actually really why I wrote it. I mean, I really wanted to reach out to people and help them figure it out a little more easily or clearly, or just, you know, offer a version of bisexuality that people might connect to.
Well, it really has for me. It's helped a lot, and I know it's helping a whole lot of other people, and that is really what this is about.
Amazing responses. Just really makes me very that I went and wrote it rather than kept it in my head. I think it's about ourselves and about how we view bisexuality. We talk about it and create the language and the tools to understand it better.
Absolutely. Sherry, you have a lot of very good views and not so good views, like we all do, about labels, their use and abuse, and why they're good, why they're bad. Of course, my favorite one of why I love bisexuality is because it gives me an identity to something that I thought I was alone in all my life, pretty much, and, you know, shamed myself over. And now to find I have a whole community that is there with me, I love the label myself. Part I don't like, of course, is what everybody else perceives the label to mean. And that's what we're all here all trying to change. So could you just give us a little recap of how you feel about the whole label situation?
I love labels. I know it's often not a very popular opinion when it comes to queer politics, or especially when it comes to discussing bisexuality. Most of the time, when I talk about bisexuality to non-bisexual audiences, one of the first topics to be raised, the questions to be asked, is why would you need labels anyway? Actually, I think labels are incredibly useful. I think they're incredibly empowering.
I have to agree with you. I think that labels are really useful. I mean, especially if you trying to put on a shirt and you don't know what size it is. But as a people, I think they can be very, like I said, I think the community label and the empowerment of being out and talking about who I am and not talking about bisexuality as this only sex-oriented thing, but as an identity and a person, I enjoy it very much.
Exactly. There was a going around Tumblr, and actually saw it today, but it's been going around for like a month or two, that said something to the extent of anyone who thinks labels are useless has obviously never experienced a huge, immense relief that comes with finding a word that describes something you didn't even know there was a word for, and finally understand yourself, talk about yourself, and find an identity, a community, a way to know that you're not alone in this world.
Absolutely. I agree.
I can certainly relate with this, even with something from my very recent past, because I, for most of my entire life, I knew that I felt feminine on the inside a lot of the time, but not all the time. And I was cognizant of trans people, but I didn't really feel like that fit me. I didn't feel like I wanted to be a woman all the time. But less than a year ago, when I met somebody online and they identified themselves as gender fluid, and when they explained that to me, all of a sudden I was just like, oh my goodness, that's who I am. I was just so happy to finally have a name to put on to it. And as a result of that, I just came out as gender fluid to the general public about 2 months ago. And now that I had a label that I could put on it and tell people, this is who I am and this is why I'm doing it, I'm confident enough to be able to express feminine on the outside as well as on the inside. And it's really made a huge impact in my life, in how I feel about myself and, you know, how I'm able to interact with people and express who I feel like I really am.
That is so great. I can really relate to that because my identity is genderqueer. I think I also had a bit of a similar process with it because I think pretty much all my life I haven't really felt not like a woman and not like a man. I always had this gender perception of myself I couldn't even put a word to it because I didn't know the word. There was a period in my life where I did join the trans community here, and I always felt connected to the trans community. But within that community, I was always read as cis people, or people normally assumed that I was femme. And because I was bisexual, a lot of people also assumed that maybe I'm just a straight ally or something. I was actually familiar with the word genderqueer for a time, but I didn't feel like I deserved to identify as that, which really relates to my identity as bisexual, because as bisexual, I spent years and years in the gay and lesbian community getting the message that I wasn't queer enough. I'm just there on the side. I'm an ally. I'm not really part of the community. I don't get to call myself queer.
I think we can all relate to that one, Sherry, very much so. Even our own dialogue with ourselves, it took me a long time to realize that I always thought, well, you're just not bisexual enough. I mean, so you can't really be bisexual. And it talking in these blogs, realizing that, yeah, that's exactly what I am. I mean, if I can call myself that, it's a big step. Finding the genderqueer label must have been a big relief.
I don't know a lot of bisexual people who don't feel that way.
Yeah, I think we all went through that. We really do. Cameron, how do you feel about it?
I have a lot of thoughts on labels to touch back on what Sherry was saying when she talks to non-bisexual audiences about labels and how they almost always kind of approach it like, oh, why do you even need labels? Like, can't we all just be human? And I find that this kind of attitude is specifically directed towards bisexuals. Straight and gay people have their labels, and their labels are queer or normal or whatever they have. Their relationship with labels isn't the same because their labels are so ingrained and validated at every turn that they don't realize how life-saving finding, you know, going through a path of discovering your own personal labels and how, like, life-saving that can be and how important that can be for the psyche of a person who falls somewhere in between or outside of the gay, straight, male-female binaries.
Yeah, well, I think that mostly relates to straight people. because they're the ones whose sexualities get validated. And actually, I've met a lot of straight people who also say this kind of, yeah, I don't really identify as anything because why do you need labels and we're all human? But it comes from a very, very different headspace. It comes from being the default. You don't have to think about what you are because what you are is obvious and natural and, you know, and right.
Absolutely. So I think labels are very useful, particularly in our community. I also could see where they can be a point of abuse and actually damaging. This trend to identify, and I don't want to get into the bi-pan debate because I think everybody needs to label themselves as they need to label themselves. But I can see there's a lot of problems developing with that that don't need to happen. They really just don't need to happen at all because we all are all in this together, no matter how we label ourselves. And I think that the common good needs to be the main function. But I could see with that labeling could be an issue.
You know, I think that the bi-pan debate is kind of an inevitable topic when we're touching on labels on a show about bisexuality, because it's a very prevalent topic and it's a huge source of confusion, not just for non-monosexuals, but for gay and straight people who genuinely want to understand. And the misinformation is rampant. And this is something that I talk about a lot and write about extensively. And it's very frustrating. I'm sure I'm not the only one here that's frustrated by this topic, but I think that it is important to touch on it.
I have to say that I do appreciate pansexual identity. I mean, I do appreciate that this word exists, but I also feel that a lot of the time pansexuality is being used in order to invalidate bisexuality. And that's definitely something that needs to be discussed, because that's a really, really huge issue. In that, Lynette, you said that we were all in this together, but a lot of the time I see pansexual or polysexual or omnisexual people actually dissociating themselves from bisexual people and from bisexual community because of biphobic perceptions, you know, the perception that bisexuality is inherently oppressive and exclusionary towards trans and non-binary people.
I agree, and I think that's the real problem. The trend I see happening is that in order to identify themselves as different than bisexual, they are using an archaic description of bisexual, which has not been claimed by the bisexual community for a very long, if ever, for a very long time. It's a medical term that is very binary, which I know I don't, and anybody else I know who claims as bisexual do not feel that way. We do not say, I do not, and I am not only attracted to just men or women. It's not the way I think at all. And I think that what is happening is we need to have good discussions where everybody's not getting angry and able to voice their opinions. And I think that one of the things that needs to be done is that in order to identify ourselves, we should not be using someone else's identity to do that. And I think because that is a big problem.
I absolutely agree with that. And I make that point. And I always, no matter what they say, I stop them and try to make them realize that they are relying on defining someone else's identity to explain their own. And I have to just emphasize, you don't have to do that. There is a valid difference between bi and pan. Bi, people are attracted to same and different genders. Pan, people are attracted to all genders or regardless of gender. And there is a difference, but more importantly than there being a difference, it's a huge overlap. And bi and pan people have so much more in common than they have different. And the definitions are so overlapping that they can be used interchangeably. People can identify as bi and pan. People can feel more bisexual sometimes, more pansexual sometimes. It's the divisiveness is a huge issue, in my opinion.
I agree with that, because if I was going to be technical, I would probably say I was pan, But because of my own political and personal reason, I hold on to bi like crazy. You know, that's the way I identify. The divisiveness is exactly it. How we are talking about this and discussing this is what is really the issue and not what the difference is between us. There are very good definitions of pansexual that don't include a bisexual at all. And that's what should be repeated and written.
I personally identify as a pansexual, but I also still consider myself to be a bisexual as well. Obviously, I'm on this show. But for me personally, what brought me to choose to identify as pansexual initially was the fact I've always had an internal personal attraction to trans individuals. And while I personally understand that bisexuality certainly does encompass those sorts of relationships as well, I wanted to have a label that, if nothing else, what it would do when I identify that way is people who don't understand ask questions. Whereas with bisexual, when you tell people that you're that, a lot of times people will, especially that aren't involved in the LGBT community, will automatically assume that that means you like men or you like women. And while that's certainly not the way that it's defined for most of us internally, it at least, by identifying myself as pansexual, it not only opens up a conversation with people about that, and gives me an opportunity to explicitly, state the sort of attractions that I have, but it also, having a label like that, sort of gave me the confidence to express those attractions, because I hid my status as a trans-attracted person for a very long time because of the fear of the social stigma and things like that. It's definitely something that I identify with. And I agree that the reasoning behind it shouldn't be there, but it helped me personally in order to express who I am and have the confidence to do so.
And that's important. I think that we need to really work on changing what everyone else, not us, everyone else views what bisexuality means. Because, I just recently came aware that there is a rumor out there, because if you're bisexual, this makes you by default transphobic, which upsets me a lot. I'm sure it upsets all of us, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
About everything you just said. So, Cameron, you said that people shouldn't want to explain bisexuality. Explain pansexuality using bisexuality. I don't know that that's the problem in and of itself. I think it's specifically the contrasting of bisexuality, using bisexuality in order to legitimize pansexuality while delegitimizing bisexuality.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
I know. So I'm agreeing with you, and I'm adding a specific detail, because specifically what bothers me about a lot of explanations about pansexuality is when people say, I'm pansexual because bisexuality is binary. They shouldn't be saying that. I can imagine someone using bisexuality in order to describe their sexuality or their identity in a way that doesn't denigrate bisexuality. And that's fine by me. The problem starts when someone needs to step on bisexuality in order to legitimize themselves. But also, I think we need to acknowledge that a lot of bi people do use a binary definition. A lot of And it's a sexist definition. A lot of bi people say, I am bisexual because I'm attracted to cis men and women. I've had a lot of bi people actually tell me things like, I identify as bisexual because I'm not attracted to trans and non-binary people, which is hugely problematic, because it normalizes their own transphobia and sexism. And we need to acknowledge the fact that, a lot of bi people do that, and it is a problem within our community that we need to address and call out. I think we need to make a distinction between
labels and attraction, because the difference between bisexuality and pansexuality isn't in the amount of genders that we're attracted to, or even in the way that our attraction works. My attraction personally works pretty much identically to a lot of other people that I know who identify as pansexual. The difference is political. It's not about actual attraction, it's about how we choose to describe it and what word we choose to associate ourselves with. Mainly I find that people who identify as bisexual are more interested in talking about bisexuality and biphobia and monosexism and all the issues that come up from that. And a lot of people who identify as pansexual are more interested in talking about trans issues and non-binary people and genderqueer people and issues that have to do with transphobia and sexism.
I noticed that too, and that's very valuable, and all of those things need to be talked about. And I think that it's a strength of the non-monosexual population to have these different subsets and different, agendas, and it's a diversity of identity, I think, strengthens our community as a whole, and the inward bickering, I think, is what's holding us back, and you know, always trying to find, like, the right word that everybody can agree on. And
I don't know that it's bickering. You've used the word divisiveness a few minutes ago, and I don't actually like the word divisiveness. I get a lot of accusations myself of being divisive, and a lot of the time when people call out oppression, this word is being used against them. I don't think divisiveness is necessarily a bad thing. It means that you're, you know, raising issues that community needs to discuss and to process. I do think that it has a lot to do with hierarchies and with acknowledging and confronting biphobia, because there is a reason why so many people want to dissociate themselves from bisexuality, because bisexuality is considered such an invalid identity. Nobody wants to use it. Nobody wants to be identified as that. I mean, you know, nobody but us, yeah?
Right, right.
But you know, for example, when you meet someone who is a cis woman who is only ever attracted to women, you wouldn't have to, like, you know, guess and try to glean whether or not that person identifies as a lesbian. It's pretty obvious. Or if you meet someone who is only attracted to the quote-unquote opposite gender, you wouldn't have to play the guessing game around heterosexuality. But once you meet someone who is attracted to people of more than one gender, you have to, like, really work your way around it. You can't assume anything. And it's that thing about bisexuality that most people who experience attraction to more than one gender don't want to identify as bisexual.
And I think that's the problem. I think that's, in an ideal world, it would be an automatic to say, oh, you're attracted to more than one gender, you're bisexual. Maybe other...
I don't know about it being ideal. I actually really, really like the diversity of, you know, multiplicity of labels. We have bisexual, we have femsexual, polysexual, and omnisexual, and a lot of other labels that can kind of be put together in some way. You know, you got fluid people, and you got, I don't know, I need the list of all of them.
Yeah, I agree, and I like all the labels too, but I feel like bisexual...
I think it's more than it being a problem, I think it's really a symptom of, you know, social biphobia.
I like to see and use bisexual as the umbrella term that encompasses and works actively to be inclusive of all of the other labels that describe some variation of what it means to be non-monosexual.
Well, I think one of the things that confuses even people in the community and outside the community is that our language is always evolving because it needs to. You know, I think it confuses people and they think that we can't make up our minds. You know, we're not together on anything because, you know, people think in black and white. They think male, female. They don't quite get anything that falls in between that or people that are fluid. And I think that's part of the problem.
What structures biphobia or monosexism is binaries and specifically hierarchical binaries, because you know the function of the binary, the gay and straight duality, give it a privileged status while you know oppressing everyone else. So you know in a way, biphobia and transphobia and a lot of even I think acephobia, I think that also fits in it. I think it has a lot to do with subverting the binary, showing that you know what the way that the world is constructed, so as to privilege one group over the other on account of the other, is you know it's just an elaborate illusion, is a social construction. We show by simply existing, by bisexuality being a thing, it shows that the whole binary is actually very, very fragile. And that is why, you know, it is so important to eliminate our existence.
I so agree with that because, like I said, up until a year ago, I clung to that binary heterosexual, either you were gay or straight, and that was what it was. Whether I really said that aloud in my head, that is what I had going on, and it took a lot to get past that. I mean, quite a lot. And of course, I'm a much happier person. Yeah, I mean, you tend to think differently when you get, you know, the lights come on. And I think that is the problem. We do threaten that basic structure that has been so ingrained and about gender and sexuality, you know, the born this way, and either everyone is sexually attracted to someone, everybody is either fully male, fully female, everybody is born with a body that they, you know, the identity that their body is. These things shake things up and it scares people. And I think we need to try to educate people that it's really not the way the world is. Sherry, did you have any other points you'd like to come up with right now?
My story with pansexuality, because we had quite a long relationship. I actually identified as pansexual for several years, I think maybe five, maybe a little bit more. And started when I first heard about the term. Someone who was a friend of mine told me, there's a new word, pansexuality, and it's better than bisexuality because bisexuality is binary. And from that moment, I actually felt something being closed off to me. I didn't feel like something was opening up, which is, you know, it's a bad sign when you're talking about labels because the labels will sort of open you up. But I felt, oh, so I should be identifying as pansexual now because, you know, I'm attracted to a lot of people. Actually, for years, I identified as pansexual, but I kept my bisexual identity as well because, you know, the thing that I told myself was that I was using it for simplicity because more people are familiar with bisexuality and it's easier to speak about it and to explain it, to educate people using the word bisexuality rather than having to explain pansexuality. And for many, many years, I actually used a lot of the rhetoric of, you know, the biphobic rhetoric of pansexuality, of, you know, I'm not bisexual because I'm better than you. I actually have an essay that I published on an anthology called Getting By, Voices of Bisexuals from Around the World. It was edited by Robin Oakes, and I contributed an essay where a portion of the essay, I think maybe one or two paragraphs, was about saying I am not bisexual, I am pansexual because I am not transphobic, because I am, you know, against homonormativity, because I'm a radical, I'm not a liberal. And, you know, I feel very different about it now. But back to the process, then I think in 2008, there was a blog that at the time was active. It was called Bifurious. And that blog was really, really important for me for all sorts of reasons. It was very a radical bi blog before there was my radical bi blog. And one day, one of the bloggers named V posted an entry about the two and bisexual. She actually called it that, the two and bisexual, saying that the two doesn't really have to be sexist binary. It can refer to genders similar to and different from our own. And she took that definition from the Bisexual Index, an organization from the UK. And that moment, I really remember the moment that I read it, and I was like, oh, so I can go back to identifying as bi. And that was a really, really central moment to my identity as bisexual. I think that's when my long breakup, elongated breakup from pansexuality started. So I continued identifying as both bi and pan, but there was that post, and I started being more critical of the notion that bi is binary. And I think it took me maybe two or three more years after reading that post to I had to leave the pansexual identity behind me, because a lot of the people who knew I identified as pansexual assumed that my view of bisexuality was biphobic. And my final breakup was with my blog post, which is now a part of the book, called Words, Binary, and Biphobia, Why Bi is Binary but F2M is Not. F2M being, of course, a term for trans men, female to male. That's what the F2M stands for. And I really, in that blog post, I really took apart why it is that this argument is being used against us and where it originated. I was going to say something about how I feel about bisexuality now. So everything that I associated with my pansexuality, being genderqueer and trans-identified and being a radical and being a feminist and everything else, now I put this weight onto bisexuality, and that's part of my reclaiming of that word as an identity.
Every moment we all reclaim our words, don't we?
Invariably, the first time that we encounter the word bisexuality, it is in a negative context. I think it takes, for all of us, it takes a very long time until we get to a text or a piece of media or whatever where bisexuality is actually a positive thing. So it takes reclamation just by starting to identify as bisexual, and of course we have to reclaim it constantly, because we constantly have biphobia against us.
I have, you wrote here, and you can tell me if you want me to take this out. You did write that at the basis, bisexuality means to be attraction to people of more than one gender, or to people of gender similar or different from mine, and that is just the basis. Identifying as bisexual for me also means resisting biphobia and monosexism. It means rebellion and heteronormativity, patriarchy, cis-sexism. It means solidarity and identification with all bisexual people, with queer and trans people as a whole. It connects me in a solidarity with other marginalized groups. Ultimately, for me, bisexual identity is about resisting all hierarchies and seeking liberation for everyone. In a very personal sense in my life, bisexuality has meant accepting myself as different from social norms, celebrating that difference and subverting the norm itself. And I like that. That's how I feel about a lot of things. Thank you, Sherry. Cameron?
Yeah, Sherry, you know, I I really loved your book. I value so highly how empowering it made me feel, and I know that everyone who has read it has felt similarly.
Thank you.
And I have a different experience. I came out as bisexual when I was 18, and I've been assured in my orientation ever since. I've only become more confident in my identity as the years have gone on. And I grew up in a pretty liberal region of the world. I knew bisexual people before I came out. I didn't have a very negative personal experience with bisexuality, and I perceived the negativity and like the mass culture and the media towards bisexuality, but for me there was always so much truth to it, and so it's always become a lot easier for me to embrace the concept of bisexual than it is for a lot of people. You know, I'm not college educated. Your book was actually probably one of the most academic texts I've ever gotten through. And I think that if I have any criticism of the book is that I feel that it might be inaccessible to a lot of younger bi people, or, you know, I've read statistics that bi people are less likely to be college educated, because a lot, you know, the language is very academic in your book.
I know. I get very academic sometimes because academic theories are part of my passion towards bisexuality. It's a lot about the theory, because I feel the theory gives it a whole extra dimension. It allows me to deepen my understanding of bisexuality and the way that it works in the world, the way that it carries meaning in the world. So yeah, I felt like I had to use academic theory in the book in order to fully explain all of these meanings that bisexuality carries. And I tried to do it as accessibly as I could. So a lot of people have actually, you know, told me that it was very, very accessible and that I did a good job. But on the other hand, yeah, some people have said that it is too academic for them.
For people like me who are new to the community, or I haven't finished college either, I think it just takes a little practice in learning the words. And I, once you do that, it is a little easier to read. That's where I got thrown off, is with, you know, learning what cissexism is, learning even what monosexuality meant. But after you do that, it's a little easier. Once you're in the community a while, those words become a lot more part of your language.
When it comes to words like cissexism and monosexism and everything, ism, these are not actually academic words. They don't appear in the academia. I have never heard these words in the university, and I'm doing my MA now in gender studies. No, I do use a lot of academic theory in my book, and it does require a certain familiarity with how academic theory works. Trying to explain the theory in terms that were as simple as I could.
It's a great book, Sherry. You did a great job.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I feel it's important for me to be accountable to the problems in the book, because obviously these problems have the context of privilege. And I am privileged in that I am what you would call college educated. We don't have many colleges here, it's university. But it's true. I did try to accommodate, completely succeed, and I'm completely accountable for that.
It's a great book, and I did manage to get through it, and I learned a lot. And, you know, you really did write it in a way so that people who weren't familiar with a lot of the terms you were using could research them independently and learn from it.
In my copy, there's actually little side notes that, you know, explain what each thing is, and that really helped a lot.
Yeah, that was actually my idea. My publisher actually wanted for there to be only a glossary at the end of the book, but I insisted on the little squares, windows, whatever you want to call them.
But it was a great idea. It really helped a lot. So just to wrap up this little conversation on labels, I feel that they are a very useful tool in our community, wonderful tool. I can see the damage that can be done with them very easily. And I think one of the problems we have is, how do we navigate this? How do we put ourselves out there in a positive light, confront the biphobia, what it is brought to us personally and on a big level, and how do we work together to come to some kind of agreement or discuss our differences in labels and how we feel about them? I do have a question from our co-host, who could not be here today because he is spending the day with his partner of 27 years, and whom he claims the woman who saved his life, and she is having a birthday today. Happy birthday, Jane. And John, yeah. John wanted me to ask, my favorite parts of the bi notes is where you show how we provide a social use as bisexuals. Our very bodies inhibit an in-between space that gives us the ability to spy on both worlds of monosexuality and to understand each. I'm a big fan of Zadie Smith because she deals in these between spaces too. You show us how our very existence challenges oppressive social constructs, but too often we hide our light under the bushel. What advice could you give us to help us to recognize our power in breaking down oppressive structures and for us to see our own value in social change? Well,
That is a huge question.
Yeah, big question.
Basically what the book is about, because the book is about describing the ways in which we can change that and use the power that society vests in bisexuality in order to subvert hierarchies and oppose oppression. So I think there are just so many ways. There are so many ways. I want my next book, or maybe second next book, to be about bisexual activism. I want it to be a bisexual activist guide. The book we will get to, you know, to read the full answer to this question.
Well, I'll be waiting for that one, because that's one of the things I've been trying to think about the hardest. How do I need these tools in my toolbox so I can whip them out when somebody says these things to me, or when these things are online or articles are put out that are wrong. You know, because I believe that the way you fight anything is on a very personal, grassroots level. I know we can put out articles and, you know, responses or retorts, but I think that just as important as working with the person standing over there or the group standing over there face to face on that level. And that's what I'm looking for, is that little handy book I can whip out when somebody says something to me obnoxious, that I can, you know, here, give them a good answer without being confrontational and make them defensive. And that would be helpful, I think.
You know, you said that writing wasn't enough, but I think writing is so important. Especially as someone who is chronically ill, go outside and do face-to-face activism. I mean, I do give talks and lectures and workshops, and I do facilitate a bisexual support group understanding, and because it inspires us to educate other people, you know, about sexuality and also, in general, about oppression towards various groups. They get that from the internet.
I just read across this that someone had been called a slaptivist because they were just writing online. And being a disabled person like you with a very low energy level, and besides having agoraphobia and some other issues, exchange in small groups or large groups that I'm not familiar with is difficult for me. But I can do things online that I can't do anywhere else. And I spend a lot of what I do online. And words are powerful. I learned everything and connected with everything pretty much online from reading blogs and talking with people. So it's very important. I totally agree. I think that one of the things I've actually had several people that I'm close to say some very, biphobic things. And you know, you love these people and you don't want to be confrontational with them or say, oh, please don't, you know. Well, how do you respond to that? I mean, I think those are things that we need to learn, that we're not always able to do in a kind and loving way, but still informative. I think that's what I meant.
I think when I'm in confrontation with a person, which actually generally doesn't happen to me on a day-to-day basis because pretty much all the people in my life are bi or pansexual. But when it does happen, I try not to personalize my accusations or, you know, when I talk about, you know, the problems and what they're saying, I don't say, you know, you're wrong or you're being biphobic. I'm saying, okay, but what you just said, you know, brings to mind a problem about the way bisexuality is perceived, and that problem is so-and-so, and it comes from this and that, and it's not true because, you know, X, Y, Z. So, you know, I just try to diffuse the tension in a way by depersonalizing the argument.
One of the trends I have noticed lately for making a more positive, lately everyone seems to be presenting us in a more positive note as in the community, at the external community and to ourselves by learning our history. Presenting positive celebrities and people out there are activists who many people don't even know are there or don't even know we have a history. And I see this as a good positive social change that we can do through the media, through online, through podcasting like we're doing now. Do you have any other, I suggest is writing for people, just write whatever you want to write, right? Whatever you feel, whatever you need. I've been very hesitant in writing a blog because I don't feel I'm a writer, and I've been told that possibly that that's not what I should be concerned with, whether I can write or not, but whether I should be writing down what I need to be writing down. So I may attempt it. Y'all, if I do, then be patient, but that's just one of the tools we can use.
I think that maybe if you don't feel comfortable about writing, you know, that works for you. There is, like I said, there is a lot that we can do, whether it's, you know, so blogging is one, it's something that I do a lot, but, you know, my first activist action as a bi activist was just to print out a flyer about, you know, there was a new bisexual group in Tel Aviv. It was actually the first ever. It opened in 2007, and my first action was to print a flyer to invite people to the group. And it was really, really, you know, bad in that I created it using PowerPoint, and it was all ugly, and you know, you know, it's kind of funny now, but it was really low tech, and I printed it, you know, in my office where I worked. Cut it with scissors manually and everything.
I was reading your paper on the mood of for bisexuals in Israel and some of the history, and I just loved it when you were talking about after you'd been arrested, you were all singing "I'm a Lumpjack and that's okay."
Yes, yes.
One of my favorite songs in the world. I'm going like, yay!
Yes. It's a very bi thing, I think, to like Monty Python.
All right, so Cameron, what are you up to in this world? You are one of those people that are doing local activities and organizing.
Yeah, you know, as important as writing is for the bi community, I think that actually I have found that creating tangible bi community has been one of the most powerful exercises in combating monosexism that I have found. And for over 2 years, I have facilitated a bi and pansexual discussion group at the Q Center, which is Portland's LGBTQ community center. And a lot of really wonderful projects have arose from a simple conversation group. It's been active for over 2 years. About 8 months ago, we started an event called Bi Bar, and once a month, we turn a gay bar into a bi bar. And it's a really simple concept that I've seen attempted in San Francisco before, and something similar happens in San Diego. It's like a meetup group, and they do like a guerrilla style takeover. But Buy Bars is kind of the first like consistent event that's dependable where the local bi community will know that at least once a month they can get together and have a drink and be in a room full of other people that are like them, and that they don't have to, it's like a breath of fresh air. And that event has been gaining a lot of popularity. Our last one was this week and we had a huge turnout and we had a DJ and it was a lot of fun. Another project that we have been working on was actually debuted yesterday. And what we did was we wanted to do something productive with our discussion groups. And we have so many regulars who come to the groups and we talk about so many things and we help so many newcomers feel more comfortable with their identity and their sexuality. And we thought of a way to kind of share that with the world. And so we started Bi Brigade. You can find Bi Brigade on Facebook and you can go to bibrigade.org and you can submit any kind of questions or advice that you need. It's kind of like a sex advice column, except instead of a gay or a straight person giving bisexual sex advice, it's an entire panel of bi or non-monosexual identified people of all ages and genders and backgrounds and experience levels. And hopefully, you know, somebody's input responding to your submission will resonate with you more effectively than, you know, Dan Savage's response. So check out bibrigade.org and send your submissions to bibrigade@gmail.com. And the Bi Brigade will be filming a introductory YouTube video that we will be circulating on social media, and maybe your submission will be our very first column that we review.
I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be interesting to be on camera. We'll see how I do with that, okay?
Oh, yeah, and Lynette is part of the Bi Brigade, which is very...
Well, they have these things all over. Like, they have Bi Coffee in London, and they have something, you know, in Brighton. I know about these because I've been to the UK, so I'm a little more familiar with the community there. But this is also something that we had here a couple of years back, and, you know, back to your question, Lynette, about activism, this is one of the easiest things that anyone can organize. You know, all you have to do is set a time and place and let people know that they can go there. And that is everything, you know, compared to, for example, you know, with, you know, a long-term project or a very big project, like, you know, organizing a conference or organizing a park, which is also, you know, a lot of work. This is like really, really easy and really, really fun because a lot of people can just, you know, the people make it, you know, they get there, they start talking. It really creates a sense of community and, you know, get to know each other and, you know, be awesome and bi together.
Yeah, and Cameron's really done a lot with that. He, like I said, we meet every month on the third Tuesday of the month just to talk as a group, and then we have the Bi Brigade meetings, and then he has the Bi Bar, and he's done some other activities. He did a Soshi sign. We have down in Portland, Oregon, down in our downtown center, one of those posts where it says, I don't know, Kiev, 1,000 miles, you know, Boston, you know how they all point different ways, and they had it put up a Sochi sign for the Olympics, and so Cameron had a bunch of people down there and just take pictures in their different colors and their rainbow and underneath the Sochi sign it went during the Olympics. That was kind of fun. That was I didn't make it down there, but that was pretty interesting. That's on app. You can see those pictures on the Q Center site, Facebook site, right, Cameron?
Right. You can find all of those photos at pdxqcenter.org, and there was also a Huff Post write up about it too. It actually got picked up by a few different news outlets. But that was a fun, simple way to kind of create visibility and, you know, kind of a rare opportunity to stage a protest outside of the internet.
You also just had an article published too recently, also, Cameron, right?
I did. I wrote about Google's continued block of the word bisexual, and I wrote that for a new social justice emag called effectmagazine.com. And it links to a petition on change.org that is circulating right now. Still over 500 signatures needed to be delivered to Google to have them lift their block of the word bisexual, which the bi community has been trying to get them to do since 2009.
So, Will, what have you been up to? Anything special besides getting to know yourself?
I haven't really been getting involved in a whole lot lately. I've been struggling with some health problems that have been kind of holding me back from doing too much. So I've just been kind of spending a lot of time at home. I have been, you know, really embracing my gender fluidity. Since it's something that I'm finally able to express openly, I've been working on building up my closet of feminine clothes and makeup and learning how to do all that stuff. But I haven't really gotten out and gotten involved in any projects or anything recently, just because I've got some health issues that I'm trying to get taken care of so I can feel better and actually do stuff.
You know, sometimes self-care is activism. You know, what you just said about building up a femme wardrobe, that's great. You know, and while dealing with medical challenges, sometimes, you know, just going through the day and, you know, being able to care for yourself and, you know, live your life sustainably, you know, not putting out more energy than you're able to give, that can be activism in and of itself.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I agree with that very much.
Yeah, and I have tried to at least remain very active on my social networks and, you know, be very public about my experiences, and if anything that I'm doing can help anybody else or inspire them to express who they feel like they are, I'd like to, you know, be able to try to do that. So I'm trying to be very open about my thoughts and what I'm doing to address my gender identity and my dysphoria and things like that.
I wanted to say that to you, that I'm pretty proud of you for doing that, because you are helping other people by taking them on your journey and showing them, you know, showing that bravery and showing them that it's okay. That is very helpful for others who are going through the same struggle that you are. So, you know, kudos to you for that, for sharing that with us on Facebook. Wonderful.
Thank you.
We're going to wrap up the whole show. I know that everybody's probably getting a little tired. I just wanted to have everybody talk about their favorite local event or project that they would like to discuss. And all links, again, will be provided online on Facebook and on the website. So, Sherry, we pretty much know what you're up to.
Yeah, I'll tell you a little secret. I'm pretty sure I'm going to win at least one award. So I just really want to be there to receive it and to be able to meet people and give talks and book signings and, you know, connect with everyone. And that would be really, really exciting. So Razor is going to succeed.
It's really taken off. It's really doing well. And we really want you to come to New York, too. We wish we could all just meet you there, but we won't be able to. But we want you there, and we think you're going to win, too. I know I voted for you. So, Cameron, we just talked about all the good things you were doing. We'll provide all the links online, like I said, in the file, to everything you're at. Anything else you want to add?
Great. You know, I really appreciate you having me on the show, and it's really wonderful to get to speak with you, Shiri, and Will, and I really hope that the bi-cast and the Buy Brigade and, you know, other little independent projects like this that are kind of unique and different kind of start to take off and get noticed more in the bike community, because I think that it's little independent efforts like this that are really going to kind of give a face to bisexuality as a whole.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And yeah, I think we're coming right along. Will, anything you want to plug or anything you'd like to add?
I guess I'll, what I'd like to plug here is, I know I already mentioned the center once, I think in the first episode, the Raleigh LGBT Center, but a little more specific than that is their transgender initiative. It might not be as relevant to as many of our audience as it is to me personally, but going to like their Tea Time Supper Club event was something really positive for me. It was one of the first times that I went out in public expressing female, and it was really helpful for me to know that there was somewhere that I could go and be accepted. So I'd you know, like to give them another shout out here.
Absolutely, very empowering. And just make sure you give me that link so I can put that in the little file, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And I'm going to, because John's not here and they have a lot coming up because of Pride, I'm going to go ahead and plug Center Bi again, because Cameron already took care of the Q Center for me. And Center Bi in D.C. is pretty active, and they have a happy hour coming up for fundraising for the Pride Week, and that will be on May 13th at 5:30. They also have Center Bi brunch. They also have Genderqueer D.C., and that meets on 4th Tuesdays. They have D.C. Bi Women monthly meetings. That next one will be on May 13th. And like I said, they are going to be at D.C. Pride on June 7th. It will be a presence there. And I am looking forward to that, because I'm hoping to maybe possibly make it, but I don't think it's going to happen. But like I said, John is very active in building the local D.C. Bisexual community groups and centers back up. So I will provide links for that online also. Sherry, I cannot tell you how happy and excited that you agreed to come on. We so much appreciate this.
Oh, thank you. I really, really enjoyed this. I don't get to ramble on about bisexuality so much in my day-to-day life.
Yeah, we loved rambling on about it ourselves. We really enjoyed doing this.
Yeah, I really love it. It's my favorite thing ever.
It's still a lot of fun. Anybody else want to add anything? Okay, so we're going to wrap it up, guys. I just want to remind everybody, remember, you are not wrong, you are not broken, you are a human being, and you are bisexual. Bisexual, bisexual. Yay!
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 Bye, everybody!
Bye!
And for topness, can you imagine what it's like cutting the same head for 5 years? I didn't want to be a barber anyway. I wanted to be a lumberjack. Leaping from tree to tree as they float down the mighty rivers of British Columbia. The giant redwood, the larch, the fir, the mighty Scots pine, the smell of fresh cut timber, the crash of mighty trees. With my best girlie by my side, we sing, sing, sing. I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night, I work all day.
He's a lumberjack, he's okay. I sleep all night and he works all day.
I cut down trees, I eat my lunch, I go to the lavatory. Wednesdays I go shopping and have butterscones for tea.
He cuts down trees, he eats his lunch, he goes to the lavatory. On Wednesdays he goes shopping and has butterscones for tea.
I cut down trees, I skip and jump, I like to press wildflowers. I put on women's clothing and hang around in bars.
I cut down trees, I skip and jump, he likes to press wildflowers. He puts on women's clothing and hangs around.
under trees or where our heels suspend his and a bride. I wish I'd been a girly just like my dear mama.
Just a dream where high heels suspend his and a bride.
I wish I'd been a girly just like my dear mama.
Audio to text services donated by GreenPath Transcripts, a digital transcription service that shares your values, specializing in converting the spoken word into the written word. If you can say it, we can transcribe it. We value and celebrate diversity. We value sustainability. We honor all efforts, large and small, by people of all political persuasions to make the world just a little better for someone else. We donate 10% of net profits to organizations committed to the well-being of the planet and its people.